One, two, three, four, Medium Talk.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Medium Talk on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network of podcasts that we do and stuff. Today's show, as always, I'm bringing somebody that, you know, I consider a special person, people that I find interesting. These are things that I like to do when I go out and find people to interview. And like today's no exception. This person is someone that I recently started going with on Twitter, within the last calendar year. So, you know, we're still in the honeymoon stage. It's new love. But it's, Olivia, who you guys might know better because you're like, Olivia, who's that? You might know her better as, at @film_Esquire, or possibly you might know her even better if you listen to This Week in Blackness as the Ratchet Lawyer, who calls in every once in a while and helps them, with legal advice and knowledge and all this stuff that, you know, they wouldn't otherwise know necessarily, or sometimes even to just confirm something, or other times just to be ratchet, which is probably how she got the ratchet part of that nickname. But it's Olivia, from Twib. You can find her, at valid.twib.me, and just search film. I forgot it already. God damn it. Hold on a second. What was it, Olivia?
You can find me under Rad Femme Lawyer. We have a voices tab, and then I'm going to have my own URL, and if you follow me on Twitter, it'll be very easy. I will do nothing but publicize it.
I'm going to leave that in just because I've never edited anything out of one of these shows yet, and I'm keeping the streak going, even if it makes it look bad. Sorry, people out there in podcast land. Rad Femme Lawyer.
This is when keeping it real goes right, I think.
Yeah. They'll be like, you know what? He never lied on that microphone. So yeah, Rad Femme Lawyer. What are you going to do there? Like, what exactly is going to happen at valid.twib.me?
Well, Valid is going to become a quarterly publication, like a quarterly online magazine. And each quarterly issue is going to be themed. So I believe the first theme is media. And so what we do as writers is we pitch to Twib's editors, mostly Elon, and talk about what we want to talk about in terms of the media. And so people have some really interesting interesting frames that they're gonna see things through, because we're all different. Our writers are very diverse, not only racially, but also in terms of their primary profession or their background from what they know. We have some lawyers, we have some academics, we have some political commentators, and then I believe Professor Blair Lynn Murphy Kelly is going to write in with us, and some other academics are going to write. So it's going to be a real interesting, diverse perspective on media, and then we're going to follow that model quarterly going forward. But Valid is also now our primary site for all of the blogging and writing that the Twib kind of affiliate writers have been doing. Mm-hmm. And Elon and Twib generally have got this really interesting model going for the new year. It's awesome.
Now, what kind of stuff do you personally want to write about, or like, do you know, where, like, was this something where you were like, oh, cool, I want in on this, I want to write some things, or is this a thing where they were like, oh, you would be good for this, why don't you come write some stuff for us? Like, how'd that work out?
Well, originally, about 6 to 8, I think 8 months ago, Elon reached out to me because, as you said, I have called in a couple times, around the Prop 8 and DOMA week of the Supreme Court. I heard them talking about the SCOTUS kind of arguments, Supreme Court arguments, and specifically there's this really weird argument about something called standing, which is like who has the actual right to bring a case, and it's very complicated, and really only lawyers know what standing requirements are. And I heard them kind of trying to talk about it, but even though all three, Dasha, Aaron, and Elon, are extremely smart people, and obviously Dasha's about to get her PhD, it's really hard to understand it unless you're a lawyer. And so I reached out to Dasha and I was like, I can talk to you guys about this if you want to. And they said, why don't you write about it for us? And I said, great. And then I also called in and talked about the oral arguments in March and talked about the actual decision in June. And so I think that it was, you know, the gay cases in front of the Supreme Court, because I've been following them very closely for several years, that brought us all together.
Okay. And so what do you want to write about? Do you
want
to
write about has okay. more law stuff, I think, than non-law stuff. But I also am really interested in the poverty issues going on and how racialized they are and how genderized they are in this country right now. So I write a lot about raising the minimum wage and all of the reasons that the minimum wage and wages generally have stagnated for the American worker. I write a lot about unions and whether unions are good or bad, whether they're helpful or not, the racialized history of unions and how they've traditionally been something that has, quote-unquote, protected white men's labor at the expense of other people. Mm-hmm. I want to write about women and feminism because I do that, but I don't feel that women and feminism need another white voice necessarily. Mm. I'm so discouraged by how some white feminists have chosen to proceed when they get called out about not being aware of other issues. I really, like, for me, I came to social justice through feminism, and I saw feminism as a door to kind of walk through, and it was almost like entering the Matrix, where you could just go, oh, there's all this access of oppression around me. I had no idea what was going on because I'm white from the suburbs in Orange County, California, and I really didn't get what was going on. Mm-hmm. And then feminism, like, clued me into this idea of systemic oppression and inequality, and then I started seeing it everywhere. And sometimes I just feel like a lot of white feminists don't start seeing that everywhere. They just see the like, patriarchal oppression of women, or just plain, not even patriarchy, but, like, men's violence against women, like cisgender men towards cisgender women. And it's so limited and frustrating.
Right.
But then, you know, there's that other chunk of the problem with white feminism, which is it just does not listen to the voices of women of color and the concerns of women of color, and it's not an advocate for them effectively. And even though I'm trying to understand that and learning a lot from other people, I'm just like not the right voice for it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's also weird because, like, feminism, like, at this point, what a lot of people's exposure to feminism is like the internet, as far as like Twitter and your blogs and your think pieces and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot of people who you know, are almost confused by it or afraid of it anyway. And then you have so much, like, internal struggle within it, like you said. I mean, just through, you know, fights for intersectionality, you know, not even getting into just like you said, your transgender discussions, you know, just the fact that, you know, it's kind of supposed to be against patriarchy, not necessarily you know, not necessarily about just kicking in and out people and all this stuff. And there's, like, also kind of a, you know, as a person on the outside looking in, there's also, like, a almost like a social dynamic to it at this point, where people can click up, and then some people are like, well, in this click, we have this opinion, and if you don't have this opinion, then it's not really real. So I could understand how it could be a bit discouraging to even write about it, necessarily, because you will have to face some pushback, just because even if, you know, people support what you're saying, there will be people who don't support it, simply because there seems to be a lot of discussion about what feminism is and means, and when it's good and when it's not.
I agree with that assessment. I think that it has always been that way, certainly in academic feminism and previously. If you look at, you know, different feminist movements across the history of this country and in other countries, I did a lot of writing about the feminist movement in Iraq, which actually predates the feminist movement in the United States, which a lot of people don't know. And I saw so many of the same problems, which is there's all of this, there is a lot of differences of opinion, of course, and those differences of opinion are informed by various different affinities. And then you have the folks who are ignoring how other axes of oppression that they benefit from are actually inhibiting them and not allowing them to be able to see the way that things that they advocate play out for other women. So, example, the abortion issue, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of feminists who are not white talk about how white feminists are completely obsessed with the abortion issue and only want to talk about that. And white feminists are like, yeah, but don't you believe in bodily autonomy? Which, of course, but bodily autonomy is one thing for white women who have historically been encouraged to have more babies to, quote-unquote, save society, which is white supremacist and believes more white people equals good.
Right.
And then the opposite of that is equally important. The bodily autonomy to be allowed to bear a child and keep it and raise it for yourself is very important to people who have historically not had that right, which right. includes women of color, specifically black women and native women, specifically gay women and trans women, have not, and trans men, have not been able to keep their children because of various different things happening. Racist reasons, enslavement reasons, genocide reasons, and homophobia and transphobia reasons. You know, you're an unfit mother because you're gay. People took their kids away all the time. So the right to mother is not something that, that is as important for white women from the suburbs who have historically been encouraged to mother.
Right. Yeah, it's a given.
Right. So, and in fact, forced to mother in many cases. And so they see it through that lens, but they don't see the negative space or the, or, you know, the positive space even in the question. If abortion is the negative space, the right not to mother.
Right.
Then where's your other side? Where's the right to mother?
Yeah, the other thing too about like white feminists, even those who like get it, you know what I mean? Because like I'll read actually read a lot of pieces from white feminists that actually, you know, seem pretty cognizant of what what privilege is, and a lot of times it's them stepping in to be like, hey, other white people, I don't know if you've been on this thing called the internet, but if you would have tried to read some before you talked, you know, but a lot of the times that like it feels almost like they have to address things a certain way, because shit has been so fucked up, you know, through the past as far as communications, and people, you know, at this point are a bit skeptical. It almost feels like there's only one kind of right, quote unquote, opinion to have, because if you get defensive or if you get really belligerent, like I'm gonna teach these black people a lesson today, you are headed for internet fail. Like, people now have a voice that didn't have a voice before, and they will like gang up on you and let you know you fucked up, you know?
100%. Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, the divisions that you're identifying have been historically only among white women in an academic context. Like, there are, you know, 10 different kinds of feminism that came from women's studies programs and the people who were in them in the 60s and 70s. And we still have the kind of history of that in like the feminist movement that still has older white women in it, that one. But that feminist movement, you know, built on so much work from women of color and then completely ignored them and didn't credit anything about it. And, you know, the democratization of the feminist movement now, where people who are not talking in the same terms that all PhDs knew to talk about and like have the same little teams that all the PhDs align themselves in, you know, it's very different now when people who have been historically excluded from those groups are like, excuse me, none of your groups take into account any of these issues. None of your groups take into account the pervasive effect of racism and homophobia and transphobia on these issues. All of your stuff is extremely limited and limited by your own perspective, and we're not here for it anymore.
Yeah,
and that's extremely challenging.
And you have people that aren't used to hearing that, so they don't like it. You know what I mean? Because it's like, and no one likes it. You know, I think people try to say they do, but in my experience, nobody really likes being criticized, especially when someone pops up to be like, this way you're wrong. Nobody likes that shit, but it's a necessary evil, especially if what you're dedicating your life to is righting these wrongs. Then you have to listen at some point. You know, if you don't want to be about that, you could just as easily be like, yeah, fuck that. I guess I'm just for white feminism. I'm out. You know, like, I would accept that as a reasonable answer as well. You know what I mean? Because I feel like you have the freedom to do that. But I don't think you know, people that claim to speak for everyone, that speaks for all women, that are for equality for everyone, I don't think these people get to have the right to tell people like, go fuck yourself, without even listening to what they're saying. And it seems like that happens so much in these cases, and I, you know, and it seems like it stunts conversation, and you end up this I think the last one was Annie DeFranco,
was yeah.
You know, who's gonna have a feminist retreat at a plantation. And
yeah.
You know, and I mean, not even getting into her, you know, a person who allegedly impersonated a black woman on Facebook, like, I think everyone knows that's wrong, you know.
That was hilarious.
But just like her response in itself, where she's basically like, listen, guys, isn't everything in America about oppression? Isn't it all like she could not really just go, all right, I fucked up. You know, that's why I canceled it, because I know I fucked up. My bad. And walk away from it, which I think, it doesn't solve everything. Some people are still going to be mad at you, and there's really nothing you're ever going to be able to do to get all those people back. But you could just say my bad, and at least they can respect the my bad and just walk away.
You could, but one of the things that I've really learned this last year over Twitter, and most of the people that I follow and learn from are feminists of color, and there's a ton of black women on that list, and there's a ton of, I knew like nothing about Native American issues and Native American women's issues, mm-hmm. to my chagrin, you know, before the last 8 to 10 months, and I've learned so much compared to the nothing at all. I didn't even think about it, which is horrible. But it's been amazing to be able to learn about that, to be able to learn about, like, these immigrant, how much immigration really is a women's issue, all of the ways that patriarchy, you know, infuses things that you might not necessarily see. And really, one thing I've learned from all of these voices is that white people really don't like to shut up. Mm-hmm. The idea that a white person's opinion, involvement, stance would be unwelcome is a very hostile and difficult thing to accept for white people, myself included. The right. idea that my perspective on this is not necessary and, in fact, not appreciated, because I don't know anything compared to someone who's living a reality as a person who is not white or, you know, not cisgendered. It was like, I'm ashamed to say how long it took me to really wrap my mind around the concept of being silent.
Well, I think,
like, really,
you know,
maybe it's not necessary for me to talk right now, you know?
Well, I think that extends to a lot of people in a lot of different ways, right? Like, for you, it would be, you know, being a white woman in America, right? But,
right.
You know, for me, it's being a dude. For a lot of other people that, you know, talk on the internet, it might just be being an American. You know, a lot of people don't mm-hmm. even count that as a privilege, but we clearly have, you know, our own privileges when it comes to, you know, it's like, what are they doing to people over there? Thank God I don't live in that place. Fuck them. And then you just move on.
Yeah.
So, you know, there, I think it extends to people all around. Like, if there was like I think you called it earlier when you said the matrix, like if there was a privilege matrix, everybody, could be to some extent living in it, in some way, you know what I mean? Even to some extent, even being a woman in certain situations, there's gotta be privilege attached to that as opposed to, you know, being a dude in that same situation because of how society might view something, right? So like if, my grandma dies or something and I start crying at the basketball court, I will be viewed differently, you know, as, and not rightfully, but I will be viewed differently than if, say, my wife started crying at the basketball court. It'd be like, oh, she's emotional. She's a woman. It's cool. She can come back tomorrow. We won't laugh at this. But if me, it'd be like, oh, look at this bitch. So it's a completely different type of privilege. But the other thing too, the women that do argue, it's ironic. And I'll just float this out here and see if you, kind of relate to what I'm saying. The women that argue, like white women who are like, listen, guys, this is okay to tell black people because as a white person, I understand. Okay. Stop bringing up all this black shit. You're being divisive. It reminds me of the dudes who say, whenever there's like a person who falsely accused someone of rape, that are like, mm-hmm. this is the real problem that is causing all this rape. People out here making this 2% of the time where people make a false accusation of rape is causing the rest of the rape. It reminds me
right,
of that.
Right, that's the same as rape, obviously.
Yeah, where it's like, no, guys, calm down.
That cause and effect chain works, right? Like, I lie and then you rape someone, that works.
Yeah, because then you really do it because you right, owe, it's yeah. like you owe them one, you know? On the ledger.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right, but it feels kind of like that, where it's like, even if, for example, like I think before anyone writes the defensive, like, you're not gonna tell me what to do as a white person, think piece, I feel like everybody should take a second to just kind of stop and be like, am I about to talk about, you know, the 1% of the time where my white privilege didn't fuck this up, or am I going to talk about, or am I about to make cover for 99% of the time where people do a lot of this shit? And honestly, man, I feel like it's kind of weird. A lot of these people probably don't even, like, there's a lot of people that aren't even being talked about, and I think they just feel that way because when we say white as a blanket term, they just hear, like, me, you know? Like, oh, you're talking about me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take that stuff personally, and they do. They do, like, I think they want so badly to be included in the conversation. They want so badly to prove to themselves and others that they're, quote-unquote, one of the good ones.
Right.
You know, and it's partially that, and then it's partially this thing which I attribute to Richard Nixon, frankly, which is this power in being a victim. Because Richard Nixon was really a genius in terms of politics. Because here's a horrible dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
He sucked. He's really, like, to me, he's very much like an embodiment of an oppressor. But he also always had a chip on his shoulder because he grew up poor in a farming community called Whittier, California, which is now part of L.A. County, but at the time was extremely rural. He was a Quaker. His dad was abusive. He went to, like, a one-room schoolhouse. And then he went to a very prestigious law school full of rich people, right? So he always had this idea that he was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And he constantly used that all through his political career. And it really kind of leaked out into the ethos that we hear all the time. So this is where you get Christians, white Southern Christians who have lobbyists on their behalf working to make their own goals, the country's goals. Mm-hmm. They say that they're oppressed because other people want to say happy holidays.
Right, right. And it also, like, does help. Like, it helps their cause because there are a lot of people who simply kind of harbor prejudices and they harbor these things, and they aren't fully fleshed out, right? I'm not saying, like, they're not, this isn't a guy going to a KKK rally. It's just a dude that works Safeway, and he just feels like, I never got my fucking due. I'm a white dude, and I was promised a job and a house and a family, and I ain't got that shit, and I'm tired of this shit, but I don't know why I feel this angst, you know what I mean? And someone goes, oh, it's because white people are the new victims of racism. And, like, you know what? I'm rolling with that. That's close enough. Fuck it.
Exactly. You know, they look, and this it's so amazing how often this happens because, you know, every time there's an economic downturn, you see a spike in anti-immigrant and racist laws.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just here. It's extremely common all over the world. Is you have this thing where, I mean, this is part of the rise of Nazi Germany had to do with how terribly economically Germany was doing after the First World War, because the rest of the European powers were just like, Germany ain't shit. This is all your fault. I can't believe you guys did this. And they broke the back of the German government, and the people had this devalued currency and no jobs and everything else. They really needed a scapegoat really badly. And they got one.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of these people don't look at, like, just life in general is like, hey, life is bad for everyone when it's bad for, you know what I mean? Like, when it's bad, it's bad. It's kind of bad for everybody. Like, if white people ain't doing good, that means shit is really fucked up, because it's not like they hook everyone else up first and then the white people don't do good. You know what I mean?
And it's funny because I think that greater disillusionment, a lot of us are much more comfortable with it than, like, white dudes are. I hear white dudes who are not getting the law jobs they thought they would get out of law school, and they're just like, what do you mean you want me to do this bullshit job? And I'm just like, oh, paycheck, job, I need money, cool. You know, like, and it's different for me. I would prefer to do something else maybe, or maybe I have a job that I don't specifically enjoy or whatever, but it would never occur to me to complain about that necessarily the way that it would to people who have been expecting more their whole life. And it's even different for people who are doing jobs that, you know, I have my own office, you know, it's not a bad job.
Yeah. I actually read a study once that, white males, actually apply to more jobs that they are not qualified for than any other demographic.
I think
tells you a lot about just the view that they have in America about what they are, quote unquote, owed and what they deserve, you know, compared to everyone else.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, I mean, I can do that. Like, once I walk in, they'll get it and they'll hire me.
What is this? Nuclear physics? Whatever.
No problem. I got it.
My accounting degree can cover this. How different from accounting can it be?
Right. So I think that sometimes that feeling, you know, it would never occur to them that the whole system is really irrevocably broken. The whole system really needs to be redesigned. It's really not working for kind of anybody who makes less than $300,000 or $400,000 a year, because labor is not, like, they tax labor at like 30 or 35%, and they tax capital at 15%. So money makes you money in a way that work does not. And that's a horrendous problem for like everybody who's not making most of their money in capital gains, which is pretty much everybody who's making less than $500,000 a year in this country. Mm-hmm. And you know, to say, okay, well, the goal of our capitalist society is for me to become rich. And that is a corrosive goal that makes it worse for everyone. That's an extremely challenging thought.
Right.
And so they have to go like, look, somebody's got it good, but it isn't me. So who do I blame?
Mm-hmm. The people that got it bad.
Sad truth is not that many people have it good.
Right. Well, a lot less than they think, right? Like there's a
way
lot of
less.
Like that's the thing that one of the reasons that I think like people look like at white privilege is this thing like that is harmful to minorities and groups that aren't in, you know, quote unquote, this privileged circle, which I mean, to an extent it is obviously. But also like the white people that believe in that shit are also part of the victims of it because a lot of times they're blind to their own circumstance. You're walking around thinking that you have it made kind of, you know, or that you should have it made and you're not. Like you're like the same, you vote for the same policies that, you know, are cutting off the unemployment for everyone else are also going to cut off your unemployment if you ever find yourself without a job. And that's because that can also happen to a lot of people in a down economy. I live in a state, North Carolina, where we used to have I want to say 2 years unemployment. And this year it was switched to 6 months, which is a huge, right. It's a year and a half difference. People just have no idea that, you know, that can affect you. I was unemployed this year. I had 6 months of unemployment. That was it. But luckily I was able to, you know, turn this podcast into something or else I don't know what the fuck I've been doing if I didn't get a job in 6 months. But I used to have an email list where it was like all white dudes and me. And my friend Asian Chris, shout out to Asian Chris. We were the only minorities on that list. But, you know, they would, you know, talk about different stuff, mostly sports and joking shit. But every once in a while, they talk about something political. And I didn't like to get too much into it because I typically disagree with a lot of stuff they said. One of the things was, they work in like job placement, like recruiting firms and stuff, some of them. And they work in IT and engineering recruiting firms. So, it was weird because their idea of unemployment is like, it's a hustle that people do to not work. These jobs that we offer them, and these are pretty lucrative, good jobs, but they'd rather go get unemployment than to take a job from me. And I was like, you do realize that even if what you're saying is true, because I'm not going to discount, you know, your experience. I'm sure you've seen that at least a few times in your life, especially the type of jobs that you offer, right? These people kind of have the pick of the litter. That's different. They don't represent everyone. They don't even represent the majority. Like that is such a small number of people who are like, I don't need this unemployment, but I guess I'll take it and go to vacation in China or some shit. Like, no, most motherfuckers getting unemployment are like, is this or not eating, you know?
Right. And I mean, what I've noticed, is the concept of bargaining power is really nowhere in our narrative. So bargaining power is when you are sitting across from the person who might hire you and you get to make conditions on whether or not you'll take the job.
Mm-hmm.
How many people have that? Nobody on minimum wage.
Right.
Nobody on the probably step above minimum wage. Because anybody who has that, the thing you hear much more often is, if you don't like it, fuck you, go somewhere else.
Right.
You know? And even in North Carolina is a great example. In North Carolina, they call that anti-union deal, quote unquote, right to work, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah, you have the right to work for less wages and less whatever. And they do this all on the auspice that you have some sort of other option, some sort of bargaining power in your circumstance that you as whatever, you know, a Walmart employee that you could walk into somewhere else and make more money than you do at Walmart. And
right.
That's a fallacy. The reason that Walmart is able to pay such low wages is because people need whatever money they can scrape together from somewhere. You know?
It's really
and so
more
the idea of comparing people who have bargaining power, like engineers or IT people who could go somewhere else, to people who have no bargaining power, low wage workers, et cetera, it's false. You can't do it. And they don't understand that.
Yeah, it's really more right to fire anyway in North Carolina. Like, you can get fired here and they don't have to have cause. Like, they don't have to say, like, you fucked up or whatever. Like, you don't have a right to a job. And it's also this huge disconnect between what people think unemployment is and what it actually is. Like, as someone who received it this year, it caps out at $350 a week, right? But which is, you know, much, much less than I was making. And my job was not lucrative at all. And I was making more than that. But of that 350, it's not tax free. Like, taxes come out of that shit. You can either take it out up front or you can take it out later. You know, so if you opt to take it out up front, like I did, you get $250 basically a week. Try eating off of that shit. Try living off of that. I still got rent. I still have all the same bills. I still, you know.
How do you even pay rent off it?
Exactly. Like,
I mean, like, you can't.
You can't. You simply can't. Don't have a car payment. Don't have any of this shit. And it's like, people just, are so callous to situations that they're not in, that I really think they shoot themselves in the foot because they don't want society to have any sort of safety net, because there's so much about America that it's been ingrained in us where we're just like, it is a meritocracy. Those who work hard get what they deserve. And those who don't get things are obviously people who don't deserve those things, and everything is their fault, you know? Meanwhile, healthcare is the number one cause of bankruptcy in our nation. And you have people that lined up to be like, why the fuck would we need any type of universal healthcare? You know what I mean? Like, people are so disconnected from it until they get cancer or their wife gets sick. And then it's like, wait a minute. Hospitals are charging $75,000 for this shit? It's like, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it is. It's partially a disconnect. And I really think, I truly believe that attitude of if you worked harder, you would get more is at base racist and misogynistic. And I'll tell you why. Because in America, we have a longstanding tradition of free labor, and the work and the standard that we apply to the people doing free labor for us as Americans, and us, for me, as white people, is extremely high compared to the standard of hard work we demand from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have the racist stereotype of black people and or Mexican people as lazy. Well, that's nice, considering that those are the number one groups in much of the country who provide free or cheap labor and have for hundreds of years.
Right. And it also,
how is that lazy?
It also helps you to create, like, this disconnect, right? So mm-hmm. I don't have to morally sympathize for these people. I don't even need to view them as a person if I can just dismiss them as lazy, right? Oh, the typical Negroes being lazy out there in the field again, picking all the cotton for us. And, you know, like...
And the idea of you know, women doing, quote-unquote, women's work being lazy. You know, women sitting at home leeching off of a working man. Okay, well, in a capitalist society, the only work that matters is the work that is paid with money outside the home. Mm-hmm. But the work that enables that work is somehow completely undervalued. So when someone who works 18 hours a day can come home to a clean house with his kids fed, mm-hmm. and his dry cleaning all set for work tomorrow, and he can call her at the last minute and say, hey, can I bring my boss over for dinner? Say yes. And she figures it out. You know, that's labor. All of that supporting work is labor.
You know, it's weird, too. Unless a dude does it. And what's weird is, unless a dude does it, then it becomes the most valuable thing in the world. Like that.
Yeah,
like,
and it becomes some reason for the whole internet to explode.
Right.
Like, have you seen this picture of, there's a picture of this black dude who has a baby strapped to his chest and he's combing his other daughter's hair at the same time. Have you seen this?
I've seen it, and apparently it's causing a stir on the internet. Of one, people giving it like tremendous props, and also people, you know, obviously it's full of trolls on the internet, people who are downplaying it as terrible. And I thought I saw one of my friends on Facebook, Randolph Terrence, who's a comedian, I thought he had the best summation of that post, which was, so this guy's doing his daughter's hair on the internet, and I just don't think it's that big a deal. I did my daughter's hair this morning. Like from a guy who did his daughter's hair this morning, you know, basically like you know, that's kind of what you're supposed to do. And it's not really like, it's not something to get like standing ovation for. And it's also not something that to demean that man for. You're just being a parental unit at that point. No big deal. Right.
Right. It's so funny because there's so much patriarchy happening. This is a good example of what you were talking about before, where Karen would be able to cry in public, but you wouldn't,
right,
without getting some ridicule. So here, patriarchy works both ways, right? So patriarchy says to a woman, this job is shit and it's yours. Enjoy it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this job being childcare and cooking and cleaning and all this supportive housework kind of stuff, right? This job is yours. Do it for free. Enjoy it, right? And you're less of a woman if you don't like this shit job. So that's on the one hand. And then it says to the man, like, you go out, you do this other thing. Doesn't matter what you'd rather be doing. You don't get to have family relationships like your wife does. You don't get to see your kids grow up like your wife does. You get to be out in the capitalist marketplace. And if you don't do that, you're less of a man.
Right.
And so that was, you know, the 50s outlook. And
right.
Then the 70s outlook starts to kind of value care work a little bit more when white women do it, right? Value care work a little bit more and go like, well, no, like we should be able to both go outside the home and choose to spend time with our family if we want. And so then that idea of spending time with your family and also doing capitalist work has morphed into more oppression for women, where now you have to do both things. You have to get paid less outside the home. And then when you come home, you still do the housework.
Right.
And oppression for men. Men get paid less outside the home because women get paid more there, like, than they used to. There's like a whole nother thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's women's work to do both housework and outside work.
It's,
you know, coded female now to do that. So men who do outside work and inside homework are being bitches, you know,
right,
being like at someone's behest, doing it because they can't function as men or something else. You know, it's so oppressive to everyone. And it's like, we really value caring for children so little that whoever does it deserves ridicule. That's what's happening.
Right,
wow.
Right. Look at you trying to raise a daughter. What's wrong with you?
So, look at you trying to do your baby's hair. And, you know, watch what happens if he's walking that girl around and she refused to have her hair done today. But then what happens?
Right, yeah. And it's
that
weird.
That dad doesn't know what to do with his baby. How dare his that mother must be terrible to leave her baby at home with that man who doesn't know how to do her hair, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's weird, too, because, like, you know, once I lost my job, I basically started working from home. And like, right. So like, we kind of did this ironic, like, spinoff, like, of house husbands and stuff. Like, but, it was funny how many people gave me like more props. Like, so wait, you fold the clothes and vacuum the house? Like, yes, I'm the one who is home all day to do that.
Yes.
That would be the function of the person at home. Like, but it is like this big pat on the back. Like, look at you. Just, you don't even care. You don't even care that you're a bitch. It's like, what are you doing? This is not Phil.
You have so wholly embraced your bitch status. Congratulations.
Yeah, look at you, man. You must wear a skirt around the house, don't you? It's like
you don't even have an ego at all. It's so great.
Yeah. It's like, no, I think those things are important and good. I like cooking.
Oh, vacuuming's good now. Okay.
Right. Don't take away my cooking from me.
Right.
So that, like, another thing too, man, like, you know, being involved in all this writing and stuff, I do want to bring this up though. What mm-hmm. happens when a white person is correct? Can a white person be right on the internet? Yes or no? What do you think?
Nope. No, that's part of the Geneva Convention.
Because I feel bad sometimes. Like, sometimes I'll see a white person say something and I'm like, that's actually a really good point. And like, if they get their wig snatched, I'm like, well, you know, try again next year. You gotta ease it in there. You gotta get a couple cosigns, work it around. You gotta build up some, you know, some rapport with the community. You gotta, you know, it's like a lot of little layers you gotta go through. And then you can say something that people go, you know what? If you think about it, she made a good point. Cause I feel like a lot of people just call out because so many people have been denied a voice for so long, right? You have a lot of animosity that's been built up. And I do feel like sometimes people just have like the wig snatching of the day that just must happen. And it could be you, it could be anyone, as long as it's someone. And sometimes I think they snatch the wrong wigs.
I think that's 100% true. I think that there's a situation, like, there are situations where, you know, someone's talking about white supremacy. They are white. They're critiquing white supremacy, and they're correct about it.
Right.
And I think that there's a place for that. I think that a lot of people who are not white see someone who's white talking about white supremacy and are like, what do you know?
Mm.
And I appreciate that skepticism because I've learned a lot from it, and I think that that's true. What do you know is an accurate question to ask a white person
mm-hmm.
who is interrogating white supremacy. But I think that there can be a conversation as opposed to that wig snatching of the day, which I have absolutely seen.
Yeah.
And it's not even like because white people don't deserve to get called out like that or because white people don't deserve to be unfairly targeted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really feel like in that case it is an I owe you one situation. Like
yeah.
maybe, you know, on days of when I feel like I've been unfairly targeted for something I've said, I'm like, well, I'm in 140 characters at a time talking my shit about things that maybe I'm not the best physical representation of. Maybe mm-hmm. this is going to happen sometimes.
Yeah, there's always, well, first of all, there's always a better wig to snatch is my belief. But, you know, I like to go for the biggest wig, you know, save it up. Like, good, but,
Well, that's why I went for David Sirota because his edges were a mess.
Yeah. Oh man, he got lit up the other day. Good grief, what a idiot. But you know what's weird is like I think also to an extent you have to be a better person than I would be because I would just quit if somebody was just like if I was like, but I'm trying to help and then they just freaked out. I don't have it in me to have the thing where it's like, let me put my ego to the side. It's time to listen and learn from this person and their pain. Like, I don't have that shit. It's just a switch that, like, what the fuck? What are you doing? I'm trying to help. Like, that's what would happen. And, that's why I don't normally go, I'll never refer to myself as an ally or, you know, any of the isms or ist other than masculist, which is, TM. But,
I love that. Sometimes I say that as a masculist.
You know what's funny? No one has figured out that a masculist is just a feminist yet. And I've been talking about it for literally months at this point. But it's all just, I want equality for everybody. Like the
of
right,
course.
You know, the right for men to cry in public and shit like that. And people are like, yeah, I'm with you, bro. I'm like, cool. Another feminist.
Yeah. Freedom from patriarchy. People don't get that feminism really means freedom from patriarchy and patriarchy oppresses all of us. Even
right.
feminists don't get that sometimes. I'm just like, dude, it's so limited. But no, I really had to learn that. I found that learning the appearance of, oh, let me put my ego to the side and listen to you has been one of the things that allows me to function in the space that I do on the internet as a white person. And so I figured that was my price of admission and that's fine with me. But also, this whole thing operates really weird for me because I'm a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of being a lawyer is advocating for other people's stuff.
Because
you're better equipped than they are for some reason to work through the system, you know?
Right.
And so the concept to me of, let me say this thing about a group I'm not part of to a group I am part of so that they can get it is mm-hmm. sort of what I do every day and not in a condescending way. It's just, that's the function of my profession, you know?
Yeah. A lot of your tweets should end with, now imagine that little girl was white. And then,
yeah.
then you should just log off for like 8 hours.
One time I got yelled at because I said that all of the coverage of the Maryville rape case would not have happened. And I'm just thinking about the fact that there are so many women of color who suffer this, who will never get this kind of coverage. I got yelled
right.
at for saying that.
Yeah, man. And the thing is, like, when that happens, like, cause it can happen from both angles, right? Obviously you have it from white people who are like privileged and men who are privileged. Like, you're going to get it from the groups of people.
Oh, no, I didn't get it from them. I got it from, a black man who told me that I was being condescending to black women for saying that because I was, by saying that, I was implying that they could not say that for themselves.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. You're going to get, like, there's the obvious targets, right? Like, you're prepared for that. If, like, some white dude is like, fuck you, broad, what do you know, huh?
Exactly.
Like, you're,
like
cool, totally
so
like, okay,
yeah.
whatever, fuck you too, buddy. You're probably one of the people I'm talking about. But then when
right.
it's like somebody who's like, oh, so you trying to help? It's like, oh shit. What's going on here, sir? I'm on your side. I'm just trying to help out. So yeah, it is kind of funny. that, and like personally, I've experienced that too. Like my dude that I low-key hate, I will never say it in public, and these people that are listening to this are paying for this, so it's fine. But I low-key hate Tim Wise. And it's not that he's not a bad dude. I would never say it in public because I feel like he does much more good than bad, right? Because mm-hmm. and it's needed, and it's just unfortunate that society needs somebody to be like, here's a white man who gets it, and you go, oh, a white guy gets it? Oh, okay, well, I guess that is.
Yeah.
Oh, as a white dude, I can listen to him. And you're like, you racist motherfucker. But like, he serves a purpose because of that. But I always have this thing where I'm like, so white dude said the same shit I said, and now everybody can like it on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and spread it to people. It's the same shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
yeah.
You know, this is like, humanity 101. This isn't even like some complex, you know, he had to do like 7 layers deep of inception to get you to understand why the Trayvon Martin case is so, volatile, right? He didn't even need to do that. Literally click on any black person's Facebook page, you will understand it within like 5 minutes, but you don't want to do that. So like I think what I mean to say is I don't even know that some people are mad at you per se. It's just like society is so fucked up. It's like, why does white person got to explain it? Oh, now y'all get it, fuck her too, you know? Maybe that's what it is.
I think it is, and that's one way that helps me to, you know, not take it personally, because I don't feel it as personal. I feel like I am in a space where I have basically like the face of the oppressor. You know, like I look really Anglo, and I am really Anglo, and I have blonde hair, and I absolutely look like that. So that's, I mean, and I get a lot of credit for that just by walking in the world. And then people try to give me cookies for like being anti-racist, and I'm like, you know, my family's black and I'm gay, right? Like, yeah. This is like a life thing that I have to do, and I would do it anyway, but like for me, it is personal in some specific way. Of course, it's not the same as walking through the world as a person of color, but like being a stealth person of color sympathizer mm-hmm. is weird in a yeah. different way.
That, by the way, that is the best and the worst thing, right? Cause it's really like, it happens a lot with our show where someone will like, be like, I just love that you speak up for victims of sexual assault. And I'm just like, I just hate that other people don't speak up for victims of sexual assault. Like, it's
yeah.
never, like,
why
there's,
do I get cookies for that?
Right. There's never a point in my mind where I end the show like, and now let the flood of emails come in. I'm the greatest. Like, I always end the show more, actually upset that, like, that we have to talk about it in that tone, because it's always like, I would rather just be silly right now. But this mm-hmm. shit is so fucked up, and it really keeps going. And if you don't talk about it this way, people will not realize how fucked up it is, and then we'll get the, Rod, you're a man that understands. And it's like, I'm appreciative, obviously. I don't mean it to demean any of the people that, but it's like, why can't everyone just hop on board where that's not special? That should not be special, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like this happened a lot to me during Fat Shaming Week. And Fat Shaming Week was this horrible thing on Twitter, several months ago, where a bunch of, people decided that fat people really needed to hear for the first time in life
right.
that fatness was not okay with them.
Right. Word!
And I'm just like, first of all, do you live in the same world as everybody else? Because fat shaming is a constant in life.
Right.
It is always Fat Shaming Week, just so you know. So that's number one. And then number two, you know, people would thank me for speaking up, and I'm like, well, on the one hand, you know, I get that I'm not the visual representation of what people think when they think of obesity, but the issue is that, like, I go to the doctor, they tell me I'm morbidly obese. It happens mm-hmm. every time. They tell me this because the BMI scale is not meant for a 6'1" woman, but that's what happens, you know? And so I go, yeah, you know, I'm sort of an in-between size. I have some sympathies with it. My mother has definitely said to me the shit that, you know, fat folks who are way bigger than I am get.
Right.
But I, you know, I guess it's not technically 100%, you know, I guess it depends, because I'm an in-between person, whether this is my issue, quote unquote, or not.
Right.
Of course, then you have the issue of trying to quantify how fat someone is, which is hard.
Yeah.
But the funny thing with me is that I started talking about it, and I was just like, actually, someone else's health is none of your business. And people are like, thank you for saying that. I'm like, really? That's where we are.
Right.
Okay.
That's where we are as a society. It's like, I remember that week, and I was reading some of your tweets, and I was like, I didn't even know fat shaming thing was a week. Like, by the way, congratulations to them organizing an entire week fat shaming. If you just step away from the political ramifications of that and the right and wrong of it, that is a hell of a task to literally organize some hate for a specific week and then no other time. Like, you know, like, hey, dude, hey, it's Monday, Trevor. You had to get your fat shaming in on Sunday.
The bigger problem is to shut everybody up on the other week so as not to eclipse your actual week.
Right. Like, are they saving shit up? Like, is it like, not till July? This is,
no, shut up. Shut up now.
Gonna save this joke. But,
you can't get your gifts until the morning. You know that.
Yeah, I'm coming for you, Oprah. I'm putting this tweet. I'm gonna post this later. But yeah, that's weird as shit. But, yeah, it is weird that people, you know, do the whole, like, and I guess, it kind of balances out to some extent. Like, hopefully, every person that is, historically aware and white, which is like what I like to call white people that know how fucked up shit white people did is.
That don't say things like, what do you mean? Get over it.
Yeah. Like, I just call those white people historically aware. And I don't normally congratulate them in general because I feel like it's not a congratulate. Like, oh, you actually read the history books. Cool. Like, you know what I mean? But at the same time, like, I would hope that all the congratulations also offset whenever someone is just pissed, where it's just like, I'm mad at white people today and you're the first one I saw. So you just getting it. I don't care what your beliefs are. So I hopefully that all offsets each other, to some extent. And it's just not, cause, you know, I would hate for white people to be run out. And I think that is, something that, like, I think people in any movement need people of all ilks. Like you said about the, valid.twitter.me, you kind of need people informed from all sorts of things in their life, even if it's privilege sometimes, just experience of it, you know? My father told me a long time ago, like, there's a lot you can learn from a white man. Don't just be like these fucking white people, you know what I mean? Cause I remember when I was like, 15 or something, me and my best friend at the time, Damien, he wanted to be a Muslim, right? Like Black American, right? Muslim, not like the,
Shabazz type of stuff.
Like, yeah. Like he read biography of Malcolm X and it was like, it's time to be about hating these white folks. And I was like, I guess we don't really know too many. So, I mean, it's not like we're really hating anybody I know. So I guess we can do this.
I mean, they seem like they suck. Okay.
Yeah. In my AG classes, they don't really talk to me. So that'll work. But I remember like him getting like way into it. And at some point I just had to tap out like, yeah, dude, I don't really hate white people. I don't know what to tell you, but they've been okay, you know, in general for me. I mean, some of them are fucked up, but I don't hate them, you know? So,
right.
So like, I do think that, you know, like, I don't think anyone deserves like the pat on the back necessarily, but I understand why they get it sometimes. Cause, you know, it's easy to fall into that. I hate somebody and don't know them. And I think that's kind of like whiteness in general in America. If you want to be ignorant as fuck and be white, America is set up for you to win. You know what I mean?
Completely. Yeah, that's part of what privilege is. The privilege is to just be ignorant of anything outside yourself.
Right.
You don't have to know any, like, you don't have to code switch because everywhere you want to talk white, you're fine. And people are like, no, because if I go to the South Side of Chicago and I talk white, people are going to be mad. I'm like, yeah, but why would you ever have to go there?
Right. You would never have to go
to court. Sometimes you got to go to court. And if you can't code switch, you're fucked. You know?
Yeah. It's like this white dude I know who was like, well, when I go to a black basketball court, I can't just be talking any kind of way there. I'm like, right, but that's not really a right.
You have to talk to the cops. You have to talk to court. You have to go to City Hall. You know, you don't have to go to Southside wherever, you know, or West Side wherever, as you have accurately pointed out.
Right. And I enjoy, I think the tradition of the calling the white dude at the basketball court the white boy, no matter how old he is or his experience level or how good he is at basketball, I feel like that is a tradition in America that needs to continue. Like, it will always be funny.
It is.
It'll always
and
be
I think
funny.
That is the most disappointing white woman to ever step on a basketball court because I'm 6'1". I cannot ball for shit. I'm terrible. Everybody gets excited and I won't show up unless you really need a girl for your team or else you can't play today. You have to forfeit. That's right. The only situation under which I'll show up.
That is the best, by the way. Anybody who gets the, you're tall, so you must be good at basketball. I once went to a golf shop and a guy who worked there was like 7 feet tall, and we were in a golf shop, and my brother goes, "Hey man, are you good at basketball?" And I was like, "Rodney, why would he be in a fucking golf shop working working here if he was good at basketball? He's 7 feet, you know. It wasn't like he was 7 feet and he was 16. He was like 7 feet and 35. He'd be somewhere playing right. ball if he could do it." So that dude, he just looks so sad, like, "I'm letting down another black teenager. I'm terrible."
No, sadly, no. No. Yeah, no, but I think that the price of admission thing is, I mean, that is one thing I think white people should get over. Yeah. You have price of admission. Price of admission of being the white boy on the basketball court, that's fine. That's an inclusion. You should be happy. But, you know, like, my partner's mother, the first time I ever met her, was telling stories about growing up, and she looked dead at me, and she said, "Yeah, we had to go to this school over here because the white people really didn't like us going to this school over here. So we had to fight our way to school every morning because the white people didn't want us there."
Yes, yes.
And then she said that to me, to my face, like the first time we ever met. And I was like, "Yeah, I know. It used to be really terribly segregated through most of it. And I think it still is through most of it, isn't it? I'm not from here."
Yeah. And that is, by the way, one of the benefits of being historically aware if you're a white person. You were able to be like, "That is true.
That did happen, yep."
Which is the only correct answer. By the way, only correct answer. Yeah, yeah, you passed that test because there's only one answer to that test, which is that is a thing that is true. That is it. I've been around.
That's what it is. Yes, Miss Vanessa. That's it.
Right. I have been around those black people in my family and also when I was in this program called En-ROADS. And I remember we once sat at a table and this old black man, came and sat down. Old black men are the best, by the way, but he came and sat down. And he was like, "You know, it's so good to see these young, minority youths excelling in academics and getting these internships. Where you go to college, young man?" I told him and all that stuff. He's like, "Where'd you go to high school?" I was like, "Olympic." He's like, "I went to high school in Charlotte, West Charlotte. First high school to be integrated. I was in the first class of black people to walk through those doors." And I was like, "Oh man, this is getting pretty heavy for an award ceremony." and he was like, "Yeah, I remember we had to walk in and we started chanting. We would start doing this song, and it was and I forget the name, what the song was, but it was like some simple chant, but he was just doing it like he was completely selling it. Like it was like me and him in the room, but he's talking to the whole table and he's just like, you know, like, "We shall not be moved," or something like that. And I'm just like, "Oh my God, didn't they hit you in the head with bricks, or like what they do, they burn the place down?" He's like, "No, the white people were scared of us. It was crazy. It was great." I was like, "Well, that is some black history you don't learn from watching PBS. You can only get that shit in person." And the only correct answer was, "You're right. You are absolutely right."
Absolutely. That's true.
I was not there to see that, so I'm taking your word for it. Speaking of your relationship, man, because I was tweeting the other day about marriage, because speaking of patriarchy, because, you know, I refuse to label myself anything other than masculist, but I was having one of my masculist rants.
You guys are always on those. It must be that time of the month.
Yeah, you know how I do. I had to get it out. I was feeling really emotional, but everyone's talking about marriage for some reason the other day, and I was like, you know, I don't talk about my marriage often because I'm happy. And I'm not saying that condescending. It just, there's this like social pressure on dudes that you can't be happily married. Like you have to kind of be like, "Oh my God. So let me tell you about the ball and chain," you know? And, you know, and it fucking sucks actually. Cause I would love to be able to be like, "Oh, guess what my boo thing did every morning." But then at some point I'd have to deal with motherfuckers trying to challenge my manhood. And I don't want to fight every day. I just want to be happy.
Everybody knows men aren't happy. Stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm already, it's like, and then when you're already happy, you don't really feel like fighting. So it's like, "Oh, well, fuck you guys. I'll just continue to be happy."
You're not
privately.
Sad and you're not happy. I don't know why you can't get it.
Yeah, it's too hard. It's difficult. So I was saying, like, you know, and that kind of branched out because you know, I think people started feeling like, oh, so you're going to tell us like all your love advice and shit, which I never do because fuck your love. I don't care about your love. Care about my love.
Right.
It has nothing to do with
me. It's about me. Yeah. This is my Twitter account.
Yeah. I came to marriage equality from a very negative place, which is I don't give a fuck.
Which is what the fuck would I care?
Yeah. I don't give a fuck. Do that shit.
Enjoy or not, whatever. Just don't bother me about it.
Right. Like, so you have like a political, no, I went to vote specifically to say, I do not give a fuck. Got drove across town in the rain to check. I don't give a fuck on that box. If you like, do as you will.
See, that's the hard part is that to get people to turn out to vote for I don't care, do what the fuck you're going to do is very difficult.
It is so difficult. It is such a losing proposition. I really do wish that instead of putting that shit on the ballot, it should be the opposite where it's like, if you don't want to see these people get married, you have to come vote. Because that shit would completely turn on its head. There's so many people that are like, yeah, cool. I don't have to go to the polls this week. Thank you.
Yeah, you should really try to get the apathy in your favor. People's apathy is really, that's why liberals lose things sometimes because we're like, I don't give a fuck. Do what you're going to, that's not my business.
Right.
Conservatives don't have that.
They don't. Oh, my God. I saw an old, by the way, when I went to the poll to vote for marriage equality, it was during the Republican primary. So obviously Democrats weren't showing up for that shit anyway. But I saw the oldest white lady that just had, like, she didn't even know how to operate the machine. She had an oxygen mask on and she was in a wheelchair. And
she hates gay people getting married.
Yeah. I was going to say, at first I was like, oh God, we can never defeat this type of hate. We just got to wait five years for her to die. And, and then I was like, Rod, this all happened in my head, by the way, in about 5 seconds. I was like, Rod.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. I was like, don't be a terrible person. Don't be a terrible, you don't know. Maybe she loves gay people so much that she was like, I would, with my dying breath, I will vote for their rights. But then.
Wow, nope. Nobody loves gay people that much.
But then she got to the machine and she didn't know how to operate it. And then she told the dude which way she was voting. And I was like, God damn it.
Well, you got to play the odds on that one. It was a Republican primary. I mean, I'm not mad at you for that.
I know, man. But I was trying to, I had a moment, right? Where I was trying to be open minded and shit and completely backfired. I was like, believe in people, Rod. It can happen. And she was like, which one of these buttons stops the queers? I was like, oh Jesus, no, not this lady.
God, people ain't shit. Yep.
Yeah. Can our oxygen just run out right now? Can it just run out? But, then I was praying for an old woman's death. That's what happens. Well,
and now you're praying for an old lady's death. This is what the gays have wrought.
Right. But, so when I was talking, I thought people would be like, okay, and I think some people did start feeling like, well, you know, people do make mistakes and shit like that. And I was like, I wasn't talking about anybody's mistakes. I wasn't even doubting anybody. But let me be the first and foremost to say, divorce, braver than getting married. Way braver.
Mm-hmm.
Way harder to do.
Yeah, you don't get any cookies for that one.
Yeah. No one likes it. Like everyone judges you. Because it's a public thing, you know, people are going to notice y'all ain't living together. Plus, you probably declared your marriage all publicly and shit, right? You have a wedding, all these motherfuckers buy you gifts and all this shit. Then a couple years later, you're like, I don't love this motherfucker. And it's like, what? But my toaster oven. So I was like, it's way braver to get a divorce. And I think it's like something that should be commended. I can't think of one bad divorce scenario. Like, I honestly, at least one person wasn't happy. No matter what happens. Even if the other person, like, they cheated on you and then they divorced you or whatever the fuck is happening, it's something good. Like, it's much better than living in that shit every day, right? So I noticed, like, you kind of were talking about, you know, like, hey, I got divorced or whatever. And I was like, word. You know what I mean? Cause you don't really talk about it that much. What happened, man? What had happened? Like, that you got divorced at one point? Like, what was going on at the time?
Yeah, so I came out and said that I was gay when I was 19.
Okay.
I was sort of forced out. Like, my mom called me on my birthday on a day that I had two finals, because my birthday's early December, so I always had finals. I was in college. And she was basically like, So you and this girl that you were here with at Thanksgiving are together, huh?
Oh, out of the blue.
Yeah. And I was like, and she goes, don't even bother lying about it. Everybody's really disappointed. So just go ahead and say you are.
How does she know though? Like, was she just like,
she saw us together.
Oh, okay.
Like she saw us like the way we were together.
The love.
And yeah, I mean, we were like, I was so deep in love with that girl. Oh my God. So yeah, it was really obvious. It was obvious. I'm not a person who has a poker face. I'm not a person who hides things very easily. And, it was pretty obvious the difference between friends and together.
Yeah. I don't even know how gay people do that, by the way. Like gay people that are like, I'm just going to bring my lover to Thanksgiving and nobody's going to say anything or notice. I'm like, oh, they're going to notice.
They're going to notice. Yeah. I just thought that I was 19 and stupid. I really thought that my family would just like, if they noticed, they wouldn't say anything, but they wouldn't notice at all. But my grandmother really was someone who thought, like, that lady called everybody gay, and even a broken clock is right twice a day, you know?
Right. Okay, yeah.
And I think that combined with my grandmother's general propensity to call people she didn't like, and she didn't like my girlfriend, gay, and my mom seeing how I was with her, she was like, oh, yeah, this is happening.
So she
called me. Sorry?
I was going to say, I wonder if it's just like, also, there's a ton of, there's got, like, inside of you, there has to be, like, a ton of, like, nervousness anyway. Like, oh, they probably suspect this shit. They probably could tell. They probably know.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah. So, I, you know, and at this time, I was living in Texas. I was there on a rowing scholarship, actually, the sport I'm good at. And my knees are really bad. And so, I was in the thing that would eventually become 3 knee surgeries, graduating early and leaving rowing forever.
Wow.
So I was at the beginning of that. It was my second year of college, but that was my first year at Texas because I transferred. So I'm already like, I'm in a long distance relationship for the first time. I'm far away from home for the first time. And my mom calls me 3 months after I get there when I'm not successful there because I'm busy. My body's busy breaking down at the thing I'm really good at and the reason I'm there in the first place. And she's like, so you're gay. What's the deal?
Wow.
And not in a supportive way, you know?
Yeah, like everybody saw the vagina stains on your shirt at Thanksgiving. Tell us the truth.
Right. Right. And it got graphic like that. It was very much like, you know, you're going to get sick from this and like all this stuff.
Oh, my God.
And the worst was that my family is not religious.
Oh, so it was just bigotry.
Yeah, they're just waspy assholes from Orange County who didn't like that.
You know what's funny, though? I don't think the bigotry, this is going to sound funny. I wish I was saying this on the main show because then maybe people could stop writing me about this shit. But I don't think that homophobia really comes from religion anyway. Like, I think
it doesn't.
I just think people use it as an excuse to be like, oh, and it's in the Bible. But it's like, it's in the Bible for like one sentence in a very long ass book. Even if you didn't like gay people because it's in the Bible, it would be a very minimal dislike. It would be like, I also don't like shrimp. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be this huge like, fuck them. They can't get married. Get out of my church. It wouldn't be so disproportionate. So it's obviously not necessarily biblically based to dislike or hate gay people or try to keep them from getting rights. So I'm actually not, like, I'm surprised that your family's a religious and still found, you know, because typically when I think of a religious families, I think of people who reject religion for the bigotry and shit in it. But, at the same time, I'm not surprised because humans ain't shit, man. That's fucked up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not a religious like that. They're Christmas and Easter Presbyterians. So they're WASP religious.
Okay.
But my point in it is I could understand if they had a whole community that they were leaving if I was gay, you know, I could get it if everybody in their life was going to just be like, what? That's not cool. But I think that you make a good point. It's not biblically based, but I don't think that means it's not religiously based. I think religion and the Bible are two different things, and that there's a lot of extra canon and extra writing by St. Augustine and by other people later that are extremely patriarchal and sexually repressive that isn't in the Bible but has nevertheless become the basis for the church's you know, repudiation of birth control, et cetera. So there's a lot of extra shit that people who are religious do to maintain control of the people in that religion.
We absolutely agree on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that religiously based can be. Biblically based, definitely not. And based in the politics and the feelings of revulsion and disgust, I think that's number one. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of feelings about it's gross. I don't like it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was definitely an it's gross, I don't like it from my family. Now, my family and I, it was rocky because I was out for like three or four years. And, but my relationship with my girlfriend, who I love very much, was extremely emotionally abusive towards me and really harmful to me. And it really gave my family a lot of jumping off point as to why this was like not the right thing. And obviously I wasn't gay because I was so unhappy and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I think at some point, because I was coming home and all these knee surgeries, I really needed my family's support. I was living at home. I couldn't work because I was sick, et cetera. I think I just sort of put that whole thing in a box. And I started dating guys and everything was good. And then in law school, I had this roommate. I lived with a straight guy and a gay guy in law school, and it was great. We had a wonderful time. Sooner or later, the straight guy and I started hooking up, and that is the person that I married. And
now, wait, when you say you started dating guys, right? What was that like? Because I want to know, like, did they know that, you know, like, I used to date women and now I'm dating guys? Or was that like something you didn't even bring up?
Yeah. I was always out as like queer, which I said instead of bisexual because I was kind of adding, like, bisexual kind of is binary, you know, assumes two genders, assumes two sexualities. So I was just like, I'm queer. I don't really know like what's half and half, what's whatever. Also, I'm blonde and I was in a sorority and I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm bisexual, you know?
Right. I was experimenting in college, right?
Exactly. It was like, no, I'm like, it's political. It's anarchic. It's like,
yeah,
challenging. I'm queer, you know?
So did every dude, and when you started dating and you would tell guys like, all right, this is my past. This is what I'm on some new shit now. Okay. I'm on dick currently at the moment. I'm accepting applications. Like, did they immediately go to the, so when we gonna get another chick involved in this, or were they all like really cool about it and they respected you?
No,
as
that's
person?
A threshold disqualification for me.
Okay.
And I'm really, really open about being, like I was really open about being queer and about, and like my first, boyfriend when I was an adult, you know, not high school boyfriends, my first boyfriend after I had been out and then back in again, kind of, were, like knew me when I was dating my girlfriend.
Okay.
So like, he, you know, like every guy that I messed with knew very well not to even say that because I was just like, I just don't, it turned into a fight immediately. It was like, okay, you and I no longer fucking speak. I will never, ever talk to you again.
Right. Okay. All right. I was just wondering because I feel like dudes always take it there. You know what I mean?
But no, that was since they did, I was like, spoiler, if you ever fucking speak to me about it, it's
right.
Over.
Okay, cool. So,
all
right,
I would say
so,
like that too. It was like, this is not a joke. Don't play with me, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Like, I'm pretty sure they, knew once, you bristled up, like, and that's off limits. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I just feel like every dude has that initial thought, like, and we can invite some ladies to the, no, okay, I'm sorry, penis shrinking now.
But it was also like, a different, like, some girls are like, ew, no, I don't know if I want to. And I think with them, there was always that implicit threat, like, well, you could, but who knows what might happen later.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Plus, I might just go
like,
with her.
Do you really want a court disaster like that? Like,
yeah.
I might remember.
A threesome is definitely not even my fantasy, but even if it was, I don't think it would be a fantasy I have with my wife, because what if she liked that shit better? Now I got to think about that all the time. I don't want to be thinking about that shit all the time. Like, she really ate the fuck out of that girl's pussy. Like, I've never seen that before. I don't want to be believing. I need to, let me be ignorant. So.
Some things you don't want to, you really don't. But also, like, I feel like it's such an ignorant stance to really, really, really want a threesome because you must not think about those things. Threesomes are very delicate propositions. It can't go well very much.
Yes. Yeah. As a person with social phobias anyway, and I live in my head so much, I can only think of the things that go wrong. Like, so it doesn't even help. Like, it's not, all my fantasies are really tame because it's always like, and that's the least amount of things that can go wrong.
And I won't even spill the food.
Right. how did the proposal happen? Like, in this situation? Cause I'm assuming like at some point he's probably more into you than you're into him or something of that nature.
I believe that's correct. He was a very dear friend of mine. We don't speak anymore. He and I, basically I was looking for a job to stay in Chicago instead of the job that I had in LA when I was about to graduate law school. And I was kind of like, listen, you know, if I'm going to stay and you're going to have this really high paying job and I'm taking a deferral for half my salary, I think that we should get married.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, that makes sense. And that was
so not the most not the most romantic proposal, but
one of the least, I think.
But probably the most American proposal, because that is exactly how the laws are written for marriage in America. Yeah. Here's a financial proposition.
Yeah, not romantic. he's a sweet guy. He's a very quiet guy. Yeah. He's not very emotionally available or emotionally involved. And like that was some work he said he wanted to do to kind of get in touch with who actually he is, because he was one of those people who's like, mom like gave him a toy and had him playing over in the corner and like didn't ever talk to him when he was a kid.
Okay.
And so and he was an engineer in undergrad. He's an incredibly brilliant guy. He's an IP lawyer now, but he's definitely one of those stereotypical math science engineer people who doesn't know how to talk to anyone.
Okay.
So I think that on a lot of levels, one thing he said to me was that I was one of the first people who like took time to get to know him and actually to like circumvent those ways that he had of not actually speaking to people.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of friends who are engineers, and I just got really good at that in college, and I just did it the same in law school. And so he and I got to be friends. And well, I felt very special because he would kind of only talk to me. Right. And before that became a burden, it made me feel special, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, for whatever you guys are looking for, you're probably both kind of quote unquote safe for each other, you know?
Yep.
You know, so if you guys had something, it may not have been what a marriage should be based on, or maybe, you know, depending on how you frame marriage, by the way, because, you know, it might have been what a 4-year marriage should be based on, or a 2-year marriage, you know what I mean? Like, depending on how you look at marriage and all that stuff, like, how long were you guys able to, you know, to coexist and be, you know, be a unit?
We were married a year.
1 year. All right. So
1 year, and the total relationship was about 4 years.
So you outlasted Kim Kardashian for about like about 8 months, which is pretty good.
Well, I didn't get paid nearly as much as she did.
Did you guys have?
I feel like when you're really gonna walk away with a lot of money, you can walk whenever you want.
Did you guys have a wedding?
We did. We had a beautiful big wedding at the same place that my parents, who are divorced, were married, at the yacht club that my family was part of.
Wait, your parents are divorced? And they were, they had issues with you, having a girlfriend come for Thanksgiving?
Yeah. How do those things fit together in your mind?
Anyway, so all the shade.
I mean, it's not a traditional marriage thing. It's really a gross out factor. I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's also like a weirdness. Like, they didn't want that. They wanted me to do what I did, which is I got married to a white guy from a wealthy family. Yeah. And we got married at a yacht club. We had a lovely wedding, and we were both lawyers, and it was very picture perfect.
Yeah. It's also hard. It's hard for me to fathom the gross out factor with women. Like, I always hear it with men, because men are so like people are so, they react so harshly to the idea of two men being together. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. Two men. Oh, that's terrible. I was watching True Blood and two dudes like almost kissed. Ugh. But with the women, it's like, that's hard. So it's hard for me to imagine like the gross out factor, but I can definitely imagine the weird factor. Just the, oh, we'll be the family on the block that they'll talk about our daughter, and we just don't want anyone to notice us almost, like, unless it's something good.
Right. Right. So, and my mom, you know, like my dad left my mom when we were young kids, and my dad kind of ain't shit. And he's in Arizona living on his third marriage now. Mm. And so my, who used to be his best friend's wife, like my dad.
Oh, damn.
And so, my mom, like, was very much like, we are a team. And the four of us, my brother, my sister, my mom, and I are like one unit. And I work, like, my mom worked outside the home and I worked inside the home because I'm the oldest and a girl. And like, it was very much like, we have the only way we will survive, and we will like claw our way back into my mom's style of living, which was very upper class, was if we did it all together, and we're very much like, you know, pulling in the same direction. And she just felt that gayness was like a step away from that, I think.
So, you guys have a wedding, right? During the wedding, is anyone concerned for you? Is anyone like, I don't know if
you're, everyone.
Oh, okay. All right. What about your mom though? Cause this is what she wants.
Yeah. We got married in January, but, we got the wedding in January, but we got married at City Hall in October because, I had this idea that it would be easier just to have the legal marriage out of the way, because we got married in California, we were living in Chicago. I just didn't want to go to City Hall when we were there with the whole wedding thing, blah, 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 whatever. We just got it out of the way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got the legal marriage done in October. And in December, I was I was having panic attacks. I had gained 30 pounds. I was so stressed out and like yelling at my mom, who was talking to me about wedding stuff, and telling her that like it just sucked, all of it, and I hated it so much. And she's like, well, you can cancel the wedding. And I said, don't be ridiculous. I'm already married. And she goes, Damn. You could get it annulled. And I said, people don't do that. Stop it. Don't be ridiculous.
Mm. Wow.
So, I was like,
even her at that point kind of knew like, you're not happy. This is not what you need to
be
doing.
Well, I mean, on the day of the wedding, yeah, I almost cried all my makeup off. And the only thing that kept me from like bursting was my mom was like, you have all of your face and your hair done. It's going to take another 2 hours if you start crying right now.
And and obviously he's feeling great because he's like, still got it.
Right. And he was elsewhere because like the whole morning of the wedding, we did the traditional thing where you don't see each other. So he was elsewhere.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it's like,
that would have been bad, but no, yeah. No, when I got around all my close friends was the worst part because you have to be real in front of those people and it sucked.
And meanwhile, you're probably at the reception like, look at her in that dress. Good grief. What? Why do we got to dance? Oh, that's right. I forgot. We're here together. Sorry.
Right. I mean, it was, and I was like so happy that all my friends who were gay and like are there with their girlfriends came. And I was just like, yay, they're here. Like my wedding's super gay, has all my gay friends in it. And all my gay friends are like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Well, So now how does like divorce come up? I'm assuming you brought it up or did he just like realize?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I brought it up. What happened was he was working in DC one weekend. And he was working there for like a month and a half or 2 months, by himself because he was in this huge, huge case that was in a court that's only in DC, the Federal Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was gone for that 2 months. And before he left, I was like, we really need to reflect on this because it's been a year and I am so unhappy. And mm-hmm. you see me like there would be days where he would just be like leaving for work to go to work on Saturday. And he would see me on the couch and just be like, you know, I really, could you try to mm-hmm. move? Don't be in the same place when I come back. Okay.
Right.
Like, please just do something today for yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, go get a manicure. Would that make you feel better? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I was just like, okay. And by then I was so depressed. I can't even tell you. And, so I told him like in February that year, I was like, we really need to look at this because I don't know if I can live like this anymore. And I just feel like it's so, like there were other problems in our relationship. That whole emotional unavailability and me being the only person he spoke to thing became very burdensome.
Oh yeah.
But he also had no idea how to take care of somebody else. And I felt very burdened by taking care of him constantly. Like I felt like his mom at home and it really bothered me.
Mm.
And he resented me for it because he hates when his mom buys him socks and shit. And like when I grew up, there wasn't enough money at my house to have new socks and new underwear and things like that. And you would like wear all your stuff until it fell apart. And so if someone came and brought me new socks and underwear, I would think that was the greatest thing in the world, you know?
Right. Wow.
And so we had those kind of things that I think a lot of couples have when they're not that compatible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause and also these could just be straight problems. You know what I mean?
Right,
like
exactly.
Other people so have these problems too.
And then I just said to him in February, like, look, we really need to look hard at this. And so then he left for 2 months in March and April. And in April I went to go see him. And at 1 a.m, my flight came in DC cause it had been delayed and he wasn't there to meet me and I didn't have any cash, which he knew. And in DC, they don't have to take credit cards in cabs. And so I had to like find a cab to take a credit card. I got to his hotel at 2 a.m. He came down to see me and then he, didn't have any food for me. I hadn't eaten since like 5.
Wow. Cause
I'd been in the whole like holding thing. He didn't have any food. He didn't have any plans for food and he wanted to have sex.
Wow.
And I was like, you know what?
Wow. And how was the sex that night?
I'm like, I'm so disappointed by this because I feel so much like it's my job to serve you and you don't care about me at all.
And I'm assuming, and so how was the sex that night? And what did you eat in the morning? Because obviously you didn't get to eat that night.
I did not get to eat. We did have sex.
Oh no, I was joking. That's terrible. Oh no.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true because I was just like, fine. I had gotten to that place where I was just like, fine, whatever you want. At least one of us will be happy.
Oh man.
So that was pretty much over at that point.
I just feel like, so then when you're like, listen, we need to let this go, I'm not happy, we need to break up, he's like, what about all that amazing sex we just had? Duh.
No. It was the kind of sex that you have where you're like, oh, this is like hate fucking, but not the fun kind.
Yeah. It's like Mr. and Silly and, Color Purple, that one scene where she's just like staring at the ceiling and he's like going to town, like, oh yeah. It's like she could not be more bored right now.
Yeah, like, it's just like, fine, you want it, you got it, here you go.
By the way, you know, that to me would be more crushing than any, like, if Karen came home and was like, listen, I'm gay and it's not even just you, I don't want to be with men at all, I would just be more hurt about all the sex that I thought was awesome. That would honestly, I'm losing my life partner, my best friend, and that's bad too, but you really let me think sex was good for that long? Like, I thought I was the man. Should see me. I was high-fiving people and shit.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is the most terrible part for me, but the other part that's the most terrible, I think about my partner now, and I think about how there's like nothing that I could ever be persuaded with and nothing that I could ever ignore her. Like there's no, the idea that I would be able to have sex with her looking at me like I know I looked at him and keep going is just beyond. I don't even know how I could do it.
I don't know how people do that at all. Like I don't even like, and I know it's a controversial statement, I don't even like drunk sex. Like I don't even like that. Like Karen will like get a little tipsy and be like, let's fool around, and I'll like make out with her and then be like, and now you go to dream time because you're drunk. And that's because I don't want to be fucking a corpse, man. That is terrible. And I also don't want to fuck somebody who's like, I just want to play Mario Brothers and take a nap. Like, no thanks. So
exactly. And it took me such a long time to like realize that my partner was being honest with me when she would tell me, she's like, I really don't want to if you don't want to, because it's not fun for me if you're not into it. Like, I really don't. And I was like, does not compute, because I've been having sex with guys for like 6 years and I had to get up for it every time. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have that trigger either, man. Like, fuck that. Don't sex me down then. I will gladly take a nap. I will gladly take a nap if you're not into it or whatever. Like, I'm not, anyway.
So that happened, and then, you know, like it was very close to over, but we were still in, like, we went to counseling for like 3 months, and finally I was just like, I just can't, I'm finished, I cannot do this anymore.
Yeah, what is counseling like for that situation though? Because is the reason you're going because you're like, this isn't working, or is it because you're like, oh, also I'm gay, this could never work?
No, it's divorce counseling, really, not marriage counseling at that point. Like, for me, the reason that I went is because I needed a place to go that had some, like, a supportive third party there who I could say, like, let him down easy, kind of, you know? So I could, like, show him how, like, really there's nothing you can do here. But I also was angry at that point because I was very resentful of how much work I felt I had put in, and very resentful of, like, how he didn't take care of me in the ways I thought that he should have, like, you know, he didn't care if I ate or not. Just simple things that are personal to me that could be in a straight relationship too. But because I was angry about those at the beginning, it was really hard for me to admit to myself that this was really a gay problem.
Now, let me ask you this, though. So if, let's say he would have been a better, like, person, quote-unquote, in a relationship,
husband,
right?
Yeah.
Do you think that you would have stuck it out longer, but still eventually had to say,
yeah, that would have fucked me up so much worse. I would have had 2 kids with that guy, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost better that he was fucking up then.
Biggest gift he could have given me.
That's crazy, man. You never know until it's over almost. You can look back and be like, thank God you were an asshole, man. Listen, you really bailed me out.
I was like, thank God. thank God that I didn't get 80% of what I needed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is one of the things I was talking about that night was that social pressure from outside of the relationship anyway, that if things are going quote unquote well enough and you're you're actually really miserable the whole time, you will do shit on the outside, like pop out some kids, buy that house, move, like whatever the things are that, you know, not follow your career, like all these things that we're told to do for marriage in our society, you'll end up doing all that shit. And then later on, you look back and go, I have been miserable for years now, and I shouldn't have done any of this. And, you know, and at any point you can hop off of that train, but it just feels like the momentum of that train is just pulling you towards like more and more long-term commitments.
Totally. And like my big fear was definitely having kids together. And when I saw my friends having kids and I was just like, well, I could. And then I was like, you know what? Don't, like, you know, you're not happy. You know, this is going to ruin your life. Like, you're going to have to stay in Chicago forever. You'll never be able to move back to California because you'll have a baby that'll be his too. And he doesn't want to move. And like, just all this stuff. I was just like, don't do this to yourself. Like, don't do this. If you wake up, you're going to regret it so hard. Just don't fail yourself that hard.
Plus, it's all good experience. Honestly, like, even if it sucked at the time, it's good to have like that experience so that you almost know what unhappy feels like and what a rut feels like, and like to fight that, you know, because I feel like you have to fight for your happiness sometimes. And it's good to know that warning sign so you can be like, and this is when things start to suck. Let me and my new person nip this shit in the bud early, like, you know. And I don't mean like get a divorce early, but you know, like,
no, it's like when you take steps. Like, we've literally said, we're like, can we, you know, that part, because my partner was divorcing too at the time we met, and so both of us, you know, were kind of together while we were getting divorced, and it was kind of a mess. And we said to each other, we're like, all right, you know that part in the breakup where you get really honest? Can we do that now?
Yeah, honesty is a motherfucker, but it's the only way, man. Like, someone was saying like, well, you know, what you're talking about right now on Twitter, these are really hard discussions to have with somebody that you love. And I was like, these are the only discussions that matter. The hard, like, the little shit, you could do that with anybody. I can go to the fucking YMCA and talk to somebody about the weather, but, talking to someone about, you know, are they taking their time to show some appreciation for you when you come in the door and talk to you about your day or something that, you know, something that you don't, or even more important, like birth control, or, you know, just all kinds of awkward shit that people hate talking about. Sexual satisfaction and your ability to pull it off, you know, things that people hate that your ego's tied up in, that you just like
money
conversations that you wish were over as you were saying them, where you're just like, why can't this be over? Why can't, those are the only ones that matter. The other ones don't break you up. No one breaks up because of the weather or which way you take the fucking traffic to work. Like, that's not the shit that kills you. It's that shit like, and I hate babies. Why you want to have one? That's the one that's going to get you.
Yeah, it is, for sure. And the other thing is, like, when you, for me, I really confused getting along with being in love and having some fire to be able to sustain you through shit, you know?
Yes.
So, like, I'm like, we get along so well. Yeah, we did get along. That's because we were friends.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And like, everybody talks about, yeah, marry your best friend and whatever. Yeah, of course, because your lover, who you are hot for, becomes your best friend, and you have a different friendship with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, the person who you never had any hot feelings for, who is your friend, is not the person that you can sustain through shit, because there's no, like, overwhelming reason. Like, I just, like, the person I'm with now, I love her so much. Mm-hmm. I loved her the first time I ever saw her. She did the same with me. It was like a freaking lightning bolt. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. When I look at her, I just go, and sometimes, you know, we look at each other and hate each other, and we're in such a terrible fight. And I just look at her and I go, this is a person who I loved at first sight because I wanted her so bad, and I loved her so much. Like, I have to get through this now. You
also,
know?
You know what? If you're having sex with someone, you will eventually become really good friends with that person if you do it enough and they're cool.
You gotta be careful with that one too. Yeah, you're right.
You do it enough and they're cool, man, you will fucking make some allowances. I know everybody,
for some bullshit, for sure.
Yeah, everyone has made some good sex allowances over the years. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? He might be a Republican, but you know, but,
definitely a balance.
But
it's a balance.
That's cool, man. I'm glad that you found, you know, some happiness, man, because you know, it's you got to snatch it while you can when it's out there.
You do, and it's hard. And it doesn't come. The best part of it for me, and this sucks, like, I don't obviously recommend my path to anyone. It's unfortunately what I needed to be able to feel like I could live my life. But you know, nobody can say shit to me now. Like, what are my parents going to say?
Right.
And they've completely gotten on board, by the way.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. That was my next question. Yeah, that was cool, man. I'm glad they came around. All it took was one marriage breaking up for them to be like, oh, she really meant it.
And I was just as scared telling my mom the second time as I was when she called me the first time.
You know,
like I told her 10 years later, I said, no, I actually just am gay, mom.
And what is, how did she take it the second time?
She cried and she was like, I just want you to be happy. I'm so sorry. Like everything is like so screwed up, but it's going to get better. And yeah. You know, all this stuff.
I think when you love your kid, which is the closest thing we'll ever get to unconditional love on this planet, I think is people's love of their children. It's not perfect, obviously, but it's probably the closest, right? Cause like it will, or actually no. People's love of their grandchildren is probably the closest. But
there you go.
Yeah, that shit breaks people. People be like, I hate niggers. They're the fucking worst. And then you have an interracial baby and they be like, mwah, I love this baby. I don't even know what was happening. Yeah. Who said that? What? I was watching Fox today and they said something about black people. I called in. I'm gonna burn the place down. I don't give a fuck no more.
Things are totally different now because my partner's son is black and my partner's black too, but my partner's son is gonna be a black man, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's so different. It's funny. I don't think my mom even recognizes how different she is now.
Yeah. They don't know, man. That shit is, that love is a motherfucker, man. It'll change everything.
Sure will.
I'm so glad I'm glad to hear that they came around, man. I mean, I don't know if you know my, controversial stance on people that don't come around in the families, but
I love that stance. And yeah. that actually turned out to be mine, because with my grandmother, like she never did come around, and she and I were never the same. Like she changed the locks in her house where I was living before I went to Texas.
Wow.
And so I wasn't living there anymore, but all my stuff was there, and it was where I had been. And between that Thanksgiving and Christmas, she changed the locks in the house.
Wow.
And was basically just like, that's what I think of this decision. And we were never the same, you know, and beforehand she used to call me like her number one granddaughter and stuff. And she just never,
yeah.
And basically when I was older, when I was dating guys, she like started coming around again. And I was like, nope, you go fuck yourself. I'm finished.
Right. Yeah.
Like you are not here for me and I'm not here for you.
Yeah. That's way too conditional. You know what I mean? Like you gotta let people be happy, baby. Can't just be out here, freaking out on everybody. Just cause they don't live the life you want to live. You go live that shit. There's a lot of dicks out here. Go get one and let this person be happy. I don't understand what the problem is.
And I mean, like, look, like it, like my grandmother, you know, she was a person who refused to speak to each one of her three children over the course of their lives and kept it until she died because of various things about their relationships. And so she was just like, you know, you are with this woman and that's totally unacceptable. And I'm like, cool. How many versions of this speech have you given that have lost you three children and now one grandchild?
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's
like,
why
there's something wrong with you.
I'm lucky to not be in one of those families, man, because, I probably would end up saying shit like, and that's why you're going to die. And everybody
actually,
be like, you're wrong.
Here's what I said to her. The last political discussion we ever got in, she was telling me some things about this or that. I forget what it was, but I think it was gay stuff. And finally I looked at her and she goes, I don't know how you guys think this is going to win, like liberals, blah. And finally I looked at her and I said, I've already won.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what? And I said, how many voting years do you have left?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the last conversations we ever had.
She was like, where's my oxygen tank and my wheelchair? I'm going to vote. Get
she took me out of her will.
Wow. Yeah. I can believe it. She's like,
but I didn't invite her to my wedding.
And then you should like not invite her and then send pictures of like,
yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's sweet.
I was really, really vindictive about it and I wasn't sorry and I'm still not. She died 2 years ago and I don't regret a thing.
Happiness is the best revenge, man. I always say.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
Somewhere she's looking up from hell. Like, no, I'm just joking. I don't believe that. All
right. If I believed in it, I would believe in that.
Yeah. She's looking up from hell. Like, look at him being all happy and gay.
And black.
Yeah. You know what's the worst part? Everybody's gay in hell. So it's her fault. You win still. You win either way. All right.
Living the opposite of my marriage.
Well, I feel like this has been a great discussion, man. You know, like, cause I feel like everybody kind of knows the public. Olivia and, Ratchet Lawyer and Film Esquire.
Everybody knows me. That's amazing.
Yeah, I feel like they do, man. I feel like I don't feel like you hide much, with your, like, activism and, like, your stances socially and politically on things. And you're always kind of in the fray, You know, like I always feel like one day, everybody who's politically active, at some point I'm going to do something and they're just not going to be cool with me anymore. I don't know what it is, but that's just my like thing. It's just that I'm too stubborn and obstinate and outspoken, and they believe in stuff and they're good people. And I feel like, when they like me or they like the show or they like, me and my wife, I always feel like at some point we're just going to let them down. Where it's like, yeah, well, I don't care about Chick-fil-A. I was eating Chick-fil-A today and they'd be like, fuck you, man. I'm actually, happy and glad that we've been able to, keep it going this long, man.
Well, that's a dire prediction and I hope it doesn't happen.
I hope it doesn't either. You know what I mean? This is not something I pray for, but it's just one of those, I always assume the worst about me. And, so I'm always like, and I'm going to say something that they're going to be like, and this time I'm not taking the joke.
I've learned so much from you in that regard. Yesterday, somebody was up on my mentions talking to me about something, gave me some opinion that what I'm doing with my health is stupid because it comes from these people and not medical doctors or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so thank you for that unsolicited opinion. She's like, well, I didn't ask you to come in my, to come on my timeline talking about my, and I'm like, you follow me. Stop following me.
Yeah, you follow me.
Like, that's rad. Yay.
People are so entitled, man. If anybody takes anything from me, let it be that the ability to look at someone and be like, I am not here for you, you're here for me. Just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just if I could just leave that legacy on the internet of just people being like, I don't know if you understand this, I don't like you, you like me. This is the way that it worked, so we're not cool. Please don't follow me anymore. Let me help you with that.
I love that. I loved it. And I was like, that's Rod. I got to tell him that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm actually in 2014. I'm thinking about starting this new thing. It's still tentative, right? I haven't rolled it out just yet, but I'm thinking about blocking everybody that takes an obvious joke and tells me why it doesn't apply to them. I'm thinking about it. Cause
I support that.
Yeah, it's so fucking stupid, man. Like, what is wrong with you? Especially when it's like something so obvious, like, man, all white people love cheese. Well, you know what? Technically, I'm lactose intolerant. Blocked. Blocked. You knew that was a goddamn joke. How'd you follow me in the first place?
Nope, you're done. You're finished. You've lost the privilege.
Yeah. I like that.
Go eat some cheese. Bye-bye.
I feel like now that I've passed it by you, I feel like it might be the new wave for 2014. Make sure you guys check her out, man. On Twitter, she's at @film_esquire. Very engaging.
ESQ.
It'll be in the show notes. If you guys have any like spelling issues and stuff, it'll be a link to it also. Also very engaging. The way we started going together was through an argument. I still remember.
That's why I'm never gonna get so mad at you that I write you off, man. We can agree. You believe me. It's okay.
We worked through it, man. I don't know how that shit. I don't remember what the argument was about, but I just remember at some point it took a turn where I was like, I agree with that part and you agree with this part. I think we kind of agree.
And we could go together.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Would you like to go together? We've made it this far. I'm going to follow you back now. So make sure you follow her there. Go to valid.twib.me and, make sure you look at Rad Film Lawyer. She'll be having like her own, section coming soon. And, like I said, man, just overall cool person. You guys now know way more about her than I did when we started going together. So you should all follow her and go with her on Twitter also. Until next time on Medium Talk, we'll be back. So peace.